You were talking about the Navy.
The Navy people we knew were mostly Navy officers and children of Navy officers. The not too many of the enlisted women were married, and the area where we lived was, you know, 2- and 3-bedroom houses, and it wasn't the kind of an area where the enlisted men would live, and so we didn't see too much of the enlisted men except downtown or around the pike. But the Navy families were all over, and the east side of town was sort of favored by the Navy families. Probably 2/3 of the high school kids who were from Navy families went to Wilson, for instance. But the Navy was very important in the economy of the city, and everybody welcomed them. The Navy, although there were certain people who took a dim view of some of the shenanigans of the enlisted men, who didn't drink any more than the officers, but they drank publicly. And this was not quite socially acceptable.
Speaking of that, do you remember when it was Prohibition
in the Northeast? Oh, yes, I remember Prohibition, and I remember my good neighbor, who used to make home brew, and we used to go and steal it out of his garage, and he knew we were taking it, but there was not much he could do about it, because he couldn't buy it. Called cops. And other neighbors, we had some who made their own wine. Some Europeans made their own wine. Another fellow who made white lightning from various kinds of fruits, and he stoked it with alcohol. Quite a good drink. There's kids used to swipe a little now and again to give us a treat. But there was always plenty of booze around, and of course rum runners operated in this area, so that a lot of water came in over the ocean and also settled in from Mexico, although a good deal more came through surf. Some of the boats that I later rode to Catalina on when I was teaching over there, the Jericho and the Pacifico, a couple of water taxis, which had been rum runners in their working days and in their mature years, they settled down to carrying passengers, but they were built high-speed boats that were built to carry liquor from ships offshore to the beaches. And they operated all along this coast, including right here in Long Beach. There was many a load of booze was landed on the sand in Long Beach.
You talked about bodybuilding. Were there people with sailboats and
big
small sailboats and things like that
at
the time that
you were bodybuilding? Well, yes, there was all the traffic. Power boating and sailboating. Alamese Bay was a very popular boating area for very small boats, inferior boats. The most popular boats there were a type that I don't know whether it was developed here, but you think of Alamese Bay in connection with them, but they were called skimmers. And they had a very shallow hull. They were decked over on the top and had a small cockpit. And as the name implies, they were designed to move right across the top of the water, and they were very popular boats. Today we're full of them. Haven't seen one for many years now. But there's lots of boating. Of course, offshore, the boats didn't come in close to the surf because the surf is dangerous. I mean, you didn't go through that surf unless the surf is, you know, very calm, or unless you're very, very skilled, so you could wipe out any size boat. The lifeguards in those years had surf dories, and I've seen many rescue made with the boats. That was a very, very tricky and rather dangerous operation, taking those things out to a surf of any size. And of course, the lifeguards in Long Beach from the very early days had boats offshore that operated off the pier, if you could, the old Pine Avenue Pier, a lifeguard station on the end of that. And they had a rescue boat there. And the lifeguards would frequently take the swimmer in trouble in a heavy surf. It was often easier to take him out through the surf and get out beyond the waves than it was to bring him to shore. So they would then, each lifeguard station had a telephone, and in those years when the rescue operation was really pretty heavy duty because of the heavy and dangerous surf, they always seemed to have enough lifeguards around so that frequently they'd have 2 men in a boat, for instance, so they would have more than one guard at a station, and you'd have somebody on the phone too when somebody went out to drag somebody through the surf. But the boating was offshore primarily, and of course Catalina was extremely popular. There was lots of boating at Newport Harbor. That's where the fancy yachts and boats were primarily. And of course in Los Angeles Harbor, the Los Angeles Yacht Club was in operation, and they built a lot of yachts, Fellows and Stewart, and I guess the Harbor Boat Works, which I think has only recently gone out of business. And then the Clay Shipbuilding Company in Long Beach Harbor built large yachts, I believe.
Did you
go to the Southwest Expedition? Yeah, I sure did. I have seen pictures of the site since when I was a small boy. It seemed a tremendous place when I look at the site now. It can't have been a very large show. But in those years, fairs of that kind were big things, and to have one in your own town that you could go to conveniently, that was a big thrill. I remember the San Francisco World Fair and the San Diego Fair very well. And these, I made a couple of trips to San Francisco to that fair. I would have been in high school age at that time. And the San Diego Fair, which preceded that, was also a big deal. I even hitchhiked once down to the San Diego Fair and got myself thrown in jail in Del Mar, California. Highway Patrol caught a sermon myself on the road and thought we answered the description of a runaway, so they tossed us in the cruise galley in La Jolla until they could confirm that we were really legal. And then when they found it out, they were kind of embarrassed. Finally got my mother at work. She was working in the county assessor's office, and she said, "That's my boy, and he's all right." So the police brought us to the wheel and put us in the patrol car and ran us up to Del Mar and showed us the best corner to catch a ride along Beach on. But hitchhiking then was not considered a crime, as it was at some later years, and this is something that has, there's been various fads about that. But during the Depression years, a lot of people didn't have cars, they didn't have gas for them, and hitchhiking was not in an acceptable way to move around. As a matter of fact, I remember at Long Beach Junior College at one time, the bus service to Lakewood was so terrible that the students out there, as a form of protest, originally it was going to be kind of a joke, decided they would just boycott the buses and hitchhike. And they formed an organization called the International Hitchhikers of the World at Long Beach City College, and they got a lot of press all over the country, and they made a big flap, and it became very stylish to hitchhike. Both sexes were all out there with their thumbs in the air hitchhiking. This went on for a period of several months. The effect of it was that the bus service was vastly improved. So it worked.
So, do you remember anything else about the specific Southwest Exposition, except that it seemed like a big deal to a small boy, or?
I don't remember any details except a lot of little pencils that I had floating around the house for years with Near East Relief on them, and a lot of samples of some horrible concoction called pig pill, which was a kind of an imitation coffee made from pigs. You can believe it. But I mean, you remember the ridiculous things. But I can remember, you know, the sort of oriental look of some of the buildings just superficially. And it was sort of a grown-up carnival was what it was. It wasn't, they didn't have serious exhibitions as they had at the San Francisco Fair, for instance. I mean, it was all kind of homegrown, small-scale, pretty corny, and a lot of carnival operators really working in there, you know, lots of toss games and just general carnival amusement.
So it was sort of hard to find.
Yes.
You talked about going to San Francisco and San Diego. Did you travel other places as you were growing up? Or?
Most of this travel was done when I got to high school age and I was moving through the high school period. We didn't travel a lot. You know, we made trips to San Diego and to Lake Arrowhead and Big Bear and Santa Ana Mountains and so forth when I was a kid. Santa Monica Mountains, lots of trips to Los Angeles. My dad was a big fan of the museums at Exposition Park. He was a museum goer, and we went to various museums. He made at least one special trip to San Diego to go to the Natural History Museum and the Indian Museum. He visited down there, which was, even in those years, considered among the best in the state. But we didn't make long trips. The family didn't take trips to Salt Lake City or Chicago or Seattle or anything like that. I think I can't ever remember going as a family as far as San Francisco. And, you know, for the whole family went.
What was it like to go to Disney
or Arrowhead? Well, we always had old junky cars, and if you went up there and back and you didn't have at least one flat tire or some kind of an engine breakdown, it was kind of a memorable trip.
But the roads couldn't have been too good.
They were narrow and much more dangerous than the modern roads. Many of the mountain roads were quite steep. They weren't high gear roads. There were lots of low gear stretches. But they were most of the roads we were on were paved. We avoided the unpaved roads because they were too hard on the old tires, the terrible old tires they had in those years. You were lucky to get 10,000 miles out of a tire if you treated it very carefully. And if you took it out on rocky gravel roads, well, you might get about 3,000 miles out of it. And the tires were not too paved, so.
Okay, you talked about
Well, the earthquake caused more damage probably to the schools in Long Beach than certainly any other public buildings. And what buildings were not damaged or were not flattened or largely destroyed was so heavily damaged that they couldn't be used. As a consequence, together from junior high, the buildings were all demolished. It was probably the worst hit school in town. And at Wilson High School, although the only major damage occurred in the gymnasium, which had to be demolished, which is a brick building. But the other buildings remained closed for 2 years or so while modifications and improvements were made. They took the tower off of the building and opened the campanile, which was a landmark. It was deemed unsafe structurally in case of another big earthquake. But at any rate, the effect of the earthquake was to thoroughly disrupt education. After the earthquake, they built very, very safe buildings in Long Beach. A number of the buildings built right after the earthquake, typical of them would be the old Hamilton Junior High, which is now the Business and Technology Division of the City College, Washington Junior High. The old three-story brick building there had to be demolished after the earthquake. And some of the Poly High School buildings were built right after the earthquake, and they're very, very solid, reinforced concrete. Some of them are not too offensive architecturally, but they're certainly strong, and they were in marked contrast to the hollow tile brick buildings that, that they replaced. However, the heavy cost of rebuilding the buildings did not leave enough money to properly fit them out, and Long Beach never did recover the equipment levels that they had had before, certainly not at the junior high level. But at any rate, I went to school in Kent, 1 year, at, half a year, I guess it was, at Jefferson Junior High, and then a year or so at Wilson High. No, it was just a year at Wilson High, that's right, because my sophomore year at Wilson, I was at, we were in what they call Kent City, which is out where the athletic field now, the student field, was all full of tents. The buildings, the school buildings were standing, and they were working on them very slowly to bring them up to code. But they were not in use. That Kent City experience was miserable. And, it coincided with some very wet, at least one very wet winter, and that place was just a swamp. And everybody wore boots. And you go from tent to tent, they had to build up boardwalks to keep you out of the mud in theory, but in practice they didn't quite work, and so the place was just a floppy, soggy, muddy mess. It was lousy. And I'm sure a lot of students had their education rather seriously disrupted because the quality of learning was somewhat somewhat poor there in Long Beach for a couple of years.
What about, how did you evaluate Wilson after you got back into the building in
the
last 2 years?
Well, I was extremely happy there. The general, the conventional wisdom was that Wilson was a great school. They not only had school spirit, but they had some basis for claiming this on the success of their graduates in various schools, the ability of Wilson High graduates to get into good schools, prestigious schools in the East, and I mean, we had kids going from Wilson to Ivy League schools, and Caltech, and Berkeley, and Pomona. It was a good high school, academically, and the east side of the city was a more homogeneous area than the other high school districts, so that we didn't have quite the extremes of wealth and poverty that they had, for instance, at Poly High, and we didn't have the divisions within the student body that they had at Poly High. So it was a comfortable place. The high schools were much smaller than they are now. I suspect that the enrollment of Wilson in my years might have been maybe 1,200, 1,400, something like that. And there were times after World War II, I guess, when the enrollment down there got as much as 3,600 in what is basically the same plant. That's an awful lot more bodies on the same in the same square foot of building on the same amount of ground.
Were you interested in science?
Yes. Yeah, I was interested in science primarily, and I took biology, chemistry, and physics, and I was on the chemistry team,
chemistry team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a gadget called a chemistry team. I even got a letter from my chemistry team. It was like an athletic letter. Yeah, it was once an encouragement of such academic pursuits. They used to give letters in music, too, band letters, and these programs were encouraged a bit more than perhaps later. But the science programs at Wilson were considered good. Of course, having taught science later in the post-Sputnik years, the level of the sophistication of high school chemistry and physics pre-World War II and post-Sputnik is just an absolutely different league. The amount of material that you covered in a college prep chemistry class in 1945, you'd cover in a third of the term in a good high school chemistry class, post-book. The quantity of material was much larger, the sophistication required was much greater, and in physics, the contrast was even greater. But of course, what happened in the post-Sputnik years was that they made actual physics so difficult because you had to be a potential Phi Beta Kappa to even get through high school physics. They made the course so terribly difficult that they just destroyed physics enrollments. Many schools quit teaching physics in town. They just, actually, the high school physics course offered, say, in 1960, that high school physics course would be the equivalent of a non-science major college level physics class. But perhaps even a little more sophisticated than that, certainly more mathematical. So, although in my high school years, our schools were considered good, let's face it, the subjects were not taught with anything like the sophistication that the best schools teach them now.
Were you interested in any other kind of activities except
the chemistry team? I was not involved much in school activities, just, you know, politics outside, but I worked all the time I was in high school. I had jobs after school, weekends, and these were the Depression years, and, you know, he wanted a pair of shoes, he'd go out and earn money to buy.
Were you interested in community politics?
Yes. And I worked in elections in various ways. We elected a Wilson High School teacher, Byron Scott, to Congress, and it was primarily the students who put Byron in office. Later, Clyde Darrell held that seat, and his son, Clyde Jr., was a contemporary of my wife and mine at Wilson. We knew the Doyle family. My mother was very friendly with the Doyles. So we were close to them. I worked for the Wagner Drug Company. One of the partners was Clarence Wagner, who was the city councilman and the mayor of Long Beach. And through him, hanging around his drugstore there, I met lots of the local city wheels over the years as a kid. And then the barbershop, which was on the block, was also a hangout for some of the local political types. So I had, I'd say, rather more political experience than the average kid, just because of the ring air. Of course, during the Roosevelt years, too, politics had a kind of a respectability that it hadn't had in this area. I mean, it was the thing to do. People realized that there was something to be done for the political process, and it was accepted and popular.
Did you talk a little bit about Byron Scott?
Byron Scott is a very handsome, articulate, bright guy who rode the idea of popularity for one trip chairman of Congress. I think he was only there one time. The district had always elected conservatives. It had never been anything moderately liberal in the way of a representative from this district, and Byron was a markedly liberal. He only lasted one term, and he was replaced by a conservative who stayed in for a couple of terms until Clyde Doyle regained his seat. But Byron just captivated the young people. He just saw him as a knight in shining armor, and it is interesting that he did not return to teaching, but stayed rather in Washington and worked in consulting work, legal work, I don't know what, but he took to Washington, and he liked that better than high school teaching. He has a sister, or did have a sister, I haven't been kept track of her lately, but she used to live on the peninsula here in Long Beach, Betty Scott, married to a dentist, and this is Mary Jane Harvey. And over the years, I've seen her name in various liberal democratic activities, still around. I just noticed this last weekend a column in the newspaper by Byron and Scott's political thing. I can't say it's the same Byron. He would have to be quite an old man.
You mentioned that Eastside
Christian
Church? Yes. Were you involved with that?
Well, we went to Sunday school because it was a thing to do, and Mother encouraged it, and it was a social center, social activity. We had lots of friends there. It was the one place where we got together with the girls, because you know, if you're 12 years old or 14 years old, in those times, you know, there wasn't any dating or anything like that, and so you got acquainted with the opposite sex in church activity, which is what was done. They had church camps. They had, Long Beach was a big church town. There were a lot of conventions in various municipal auditoriums over the years. And, yeah, it was an activity that that we enjoyed. I was involved in church stuff, local over until the age of 18 or 19, that I guess. Dropped that. But in the Depression years, the Eastside Church, the Disciples of Christ is a denomination with a large degree of independence in individual churches. That particular church was a rather liberal church, and in those years there was a kind of a political religious movement called the Social Gospel, sort of almost, well, it had various shades, but some of it was Christian socialism. They were appealing to the radical styles which were acceptable at the time. And this church, more than most in Long Beach, accepted this kind of idea, the social gospel. This was appealing to idealistic, liberal-minded kids, and the church encouraged them.
Okay, you're
going to
go on talking about the
disciples
of Christ.
But at any rate, churches were a big industry in Long Beach, and it was a thing to do, and I made lots of friends in the church, some of them that I have retained over the years. A lot of people in that congregation are either people I knew there or their kids that are in that church, although I haven't had much contact with them over the years.
Is that where you met your wife?
No, I met my wife in class at Jefferson Junior High, and it was about 13, 14 years old. But we were just classmates. We were in the mid-year class that they used to have then. They used to graduate students in the mid-year, and the mid-year classes were always small. As a consequence, we had lots of classes together of all kinds over the years. Well, I knew all of us through high school, and it wasn't until after I graduated from, we both graduated from high school, we were going to Long Beach City College that we started going there.
You talked about working. How did you decide to go to Long Beach City College? Because
that's right. That was the only place to go. It is an excellent school. It was one of the top two or three junior highs in California, and California was one of the few states where they had really good junior college systems. I think principally California and Texas are the most junior colleges in the country. But Long Beach Junior College in those years had the reputation of producing transfer students at Berkeley, who did better on the average than people who matriculated there as freshmen. So Long Beach was good. And talking to the old staff members years later, they talked about those years as the golden years for Long Beach City College. The reason being that they were getting a reasonable cross-sample of the college population, all cream and not just skimmed off, as would occur now. They don't get too many top students entering City College when you have Cal State Long Beach, UCLA, USC, and so forth, competing for these same people. Also, in those years, the scholarships were not as available as they are now. So that you just about had those people of ordinary means or modest means, you just about had to live at home to go to school, or you had to work, providing your entire fees at college, which was very, very difficult. Of course, let's face it, the college programs were not as intense then as they are now, so that it did take quite as much homework as it were. It didn't, a person could get their way through school easier than they can now, because the program was not as difficult.
And did you major in science?
Well, I did it around. I started out as an engineering major. I actually went there 3 years, took all kinds of materials, a lot of science and engineering, but also English and art and history and things that interested me. I took a lot of stuff, and then when I left there, and I went to a four-year school, I went to USC as a cinematography major. They came and asked me one semester, when I decided that that was a false dream, because I had hopes of getting a technician's job in the motion picture industry. I was interested in the photography, the technical side of it. And while I was at USC, I met a lot of people in the industry and made the fascinating discovery that to get in the industry in those years, you had to buy your way in. And many of the motion picture unions were controlled by the IATSC, which was a mafia outfit. You played their ballgame. The working conditions and wages were excellent, but the gangster control of the job entrance was really spooky. And this is when I decided that that really wasn't worth it. I had a classmate who had a ticket for the motion picture projectionist. And he told me that he could get me a projectionist ticket, but it would cost me, I forget the figure, I think it was $5,000. That was a lot of money. Which, of course, is just pure graft of going, you know, now to some mafia type racketeers. So this is what deters me on that. So after that, I decided that, well, I better just go get myself a job and figure out what I wanted to do. And I went to work. By this time, it was getting close to our interest in World War II. I went to work with California Shipbuilding in the engineering office.
Okay. You went to
City College
for
2 years,
and did you work there
that time? No.
This summer.
You didn't do the kind of jobs
that you can do
at college? No. Well, actually, these were more prosperous years for our family because we had sold one of the mines in New Mexico, and we had some money in the family.
Did you go to City College?
Yes, my older brother went to Berkeley, and my younger brother went to UCLA.
Okay.
We all went to City College.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they went to...
They didn't start out at that point. They went to FCC.
I later went back after World War II on the GI Bill and got my bachelor's and master's degree at USC.
Did you go to USC when you went there?
No.
No,
I commuted.
And commuted?
No, car, automobile. It wasn't bad. 35 minutes was all it took. Up there again. You go straight up State Road. Good, fast,
I'm not clear
how you got from being interested in science and chemistry and all that to cinematography. Well, I had started out getting interested in engineering. And then I decided that engineering was not my bag at all. And I just never even thought about pure science. I guess I didn't ever think I was smart enough to go into serious pure science. After World War II, when I went back and took a degree in geology. So I had had several majors over the course of the years, and I took my master's degree in education, so there.
Okay. You decided that you didn't want to be in the mafia and the cinema business, and so you went to Calship to get the engineering.
What did you do there? Just clerical work. Planning engineering was just clerical work. He just pitched a paper around that was designed to direct the flow of material in what was then a kind of an innovative shipbuilding program where you had, it was almost like a assembly line construction of ships. They made many ships of on the same plan, and they would cut up the parts in quantity, make sub-assemblies, move the sub-assemblies to the ships, and it was, in other words, instead of building each ship as a separate entity, why they assembled them on sub-assembly lines and then put the whole thing on one all along the way. And this required a lot of coordination of production times and delivery businesses and storage, and you had to know where things were, and you have an awful lot of labor involved, and you've got to make sure that the pieces are at the right place at the right time, or you have a lot of labor standing around and can't work. So this was what planning engineering department was about. We didn't actually design anything. All we did was expedited the flow of materials from the line. It was an interesting job.
And how long
did
you do it?
I forget how long I was there.
Well,
6 to 8 months, and then the military called. Pearl Harbor occurred while I was working there, and then I got the army.
You were in
the
army?
Mm-hmm. I went in the army. It's a kind of strange trajectory, but I went in the army.
What was
the origin of the conscientious objector in World War II? There was no strain in a medical group. I was in a hospital. If I had been a combat medic in the infantry or attached to an armored unit or something like that, it might have been a little different. But in the hospital where everybody was doing that kind of work and was basically a non-combatant. In World War II, medical personnel was considered non-combatants. I mean, their equipment was marked with a Red Cross, helmets, and not the ones we wore, but the combat medics wore Red Cross. And all of our ambulances, trucks, tents, everything was marked, and we were supposed to be not drop a target. We did get bombed and strafed a few times during World War II, but I mean, it was normally they didn't go for hospitals.
Why did you decide to do those
kinds of things? Well, during my church years, there was a big peace movement in the United States, and I was involved in that over a period of many years, and was just imbued with the ideas of pacifism as a way of making the point that war was not a very satisfactory way of settling anything. I actually had received a draft status of a 1-0 conscientious objector, and if I had chosen, I could have gone to a forestry camp, and the boys don't take service entirely. One of the main reasons I didn't, frankly, was that in those years, you had to pay your own keep when you were in one of these places. You didn't receive any pay, and all that, they had to provide for your room and board. Well, I had been married a short time, had a wife. She didn't have any money. I didn't have any money. I would have been a burden on somebody, a financial burden. And plus the fact that I was also a fervent anti-Nazi and was not primarily my goal to to avoid all risk or anything to do with that particular war. So it was not a difficult choice to decide to take the military non-combatant role, and I changed my status to 1-0, which is eligible for the draft as a non-combatant, and I was assigned to medical training at Camp Grand, Illinois, and then to x-ray training at Letterman Hospital in San Francisco. Went overseas. We were the first field hospital to go overseas in World War II. In fact, almost 3 years overseas.
Before you tell me
when you went
overseas, we talked about
staying up to City College. Where did you do after you? Ruth, you mean?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ruth went to City College, and then during World War II, while I was gone, she was at two jobs, and mostly as a library clerk at the Long Beach Public Library.
And
stayed home, stayed here. Yes, she went about 3 years to City College, too.
Okay, and so where did you go when you went to
City? So we went to the Middle East by way of the Cape of Good Hope and the Red Sea, and I was in a unit which was attached to a small